Translation. You are the spiritual master of great saints and devotees. I am therefore begging you to show the way of perfection for all persons, and especially for one who is about to die. Then purport by Srila Prabhupada. Unless one is perfectly anxious to inquire about the way of perfection, there is no necessity of approaching the spiritual master. A spiritual master is not a kind of decoration for a householder. Generally, a fashionable materialist engages a so-called spiritual master without any profit. The pseudo-spiritual master flatters the so-called disciple, and thereby both the master and his ward go to hell without a doubt. Maharaj Parikshit is the right type of disciple because he puts forward questions vital to the interest of all men, particularly for the dying man. The question put forward by Maharaj Parikshit is the basic principle of the complete thesis of Srimad Bhagavatam. Now let us see how intelligently the great master replies. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasme Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. Bande Ham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakablam Sri Guran Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatanvita Tam Sajiva Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita, Sri Vishakam Pitamscha. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagapate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namaskate, Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavanishri, Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priya, Vancha Kalpatrubhyas Cha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha, Patitanam Pavadevyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this verse is a very well-known verse. In fact, Prabhupada says in the purport that this verse is, it provides the basis of the entire thesis of the Srimad Bhagavatam. In other words, because this is a question put by Maharaj Parikshit to Shukadeva Goswami. And the answer to this question is the entire, rest of the Srimad Bhagavatam from Canto 2. To Canto 12. So this chapter and verse that we are looking at now today is almost the end of the first canto. So just to put in a little bit of context here, as many of you will know that Maharaj Parikshit, he made an offense against a brahmana, a rishi, actually, Shamaka Rishi. When he was out, Maharaj Parikshit was out hunting in the forest, and he was hungry and thirsty, and he arrived at the ashram of Shamaka Rishi, hoping for some water and some food. And, this Shamaka Rishi was deep in meditation, and so he didn't respond. And Maharaj Parikshit got disturbed, and he actually garlanded Shamaka Rishi with a dead snake. As a result of which, he was cursed by Sringi, the son of Shamaka Rishi. to die in 7 days from the bite of a snake bird. So even though Maharaj Parikshit was a pure devotee of Krishna, he made a little mistake. And actually for most of us, although we may consider ourselves to be devotees, but in a situation like that, where there is extreme thirst and hunger, and someone is not responding, but especially for him as a Parikshit Maharaj, he was a king, he was the emperor. So he was not expecting this kind of welcome, and obviously he got annoyed and frustrated. But straight after it happened, even before he received news of the curse, he was already repenting, and he realized that he'd actually made an offense against a great sage, and he was immediately ready to accept his reaction. He was immediately repentant. So then when he received news of the curse, then he was totally unfazed by it, actually. And he saw it in a positive way. He actually saw it as a good news. He had been cursed to die in 7 days by the bite of a snake bird. And he welcomed it. He welcomed that news because he felt that he'd made an offense and he deserved whatever reaction he got. Now, that was, the punishment was not really fit for the crime. It was an exceeding punishment. It was an exaggerated punishment. And Shamika Rishi, when he found out about it, he was really, really devastated, and he was very angry with his son, and he told him that it was wrong what he'd done. Especially because Maharaj Parikshit is the emperor of the world and he's the protector of all the citizens. So without a monarch, then the world goes into chaos. But Parikshit Maharaj, he was not afraid because he was a surrendered soul and he was a pure devotee of Krishna. So he decided to sit down on the bank of the Ganges and fast for 7 days until his death. And the news spread around very quickly. In those days, there was no internet as we know it. There was no electronic technology. But news got to spread around fast when something like this would happen, in a more mystical way, you could say. Like, for example, Narada Muni, he travels all over the universe and he spreads news of important events. And so maybe it was Narada Muni who spread the news, maybe it was someone else, but it got around very quickly. And so many great souls converged on that spot. There were great sages from all over the universe. There were demigods, there were kings and Raja Rishis. So Parikshit Maharaj, he received them all very happily and bowed down to them all and welcomed them. And he actually offered a little few words to them. Which he said that, "I pray that if I should take again my birth in the material world, I will have complete attachment to the unlimited Lord Krishna, association with his devotees, and friendly relations with all living beings." So these were the three blessings that he requested from the Brahmins, the sages. And that was all he wanted. Of course, he didn't have to take birth again in the material world, but he was ready for anything. And all he wanted was attachment to Krishna, association with devotees, and friendly relations with all living beings. No enmity with anyone. So even though he was an emperor and a king in this life, where he had to do battle sometimes, but by nature, he simply desired to be friendly with everyone. So he immediately renounced his kingdom. He passed his kingdom to his son, and he sat down to fast until death. And the sages, they told him that they would stay with him also, that they would be with him. So he was in a very, very favorable circumstance for death. He was on the bank of the Ganges, and he was surrounded by all the greatest souls in the universe. And he was ready to hear from them and hear about Krishna from them. So then he posed a question to them, that what is the duty of everyone in all circumstances, and especially those who are about to die. So as soon as he posed this question, then Sukadeva Goswami appeared on the scene. Sukadeva Goswami, he was only 16 years old, whereas all the rest of the assembly, they were adults, they were mature. A lot of them were elderly, wise people. But they were all very impressed with Sukadeva Goswami because he was not an ordinary person. The son of Vyasadeva. He was traveling the earth. He was very beautiful. He was naked. He was blackish like Krishna. He was very attractive, and he had all these women and children following him around, completely mesmerized by him. So the sages, they were expert in physiognomy, and they could recognize the auspicious bodily features of Sukadeva Goswami. They could recognize his greatness from those bodily features, and they immediately stood up to honor him. Parikshit bowed down before him. The women and children all dispersed, and Sukadeva took the high seat. So Maharaj Parikshit, he glorified Sukadeva Goswami and said that Krishna had inspired him to appear there. And then he addressed his question to Sukadeva Goswami, which is the verse that we just read. He wanted to know from Sukadeva Goswami, what is the purpose of life, how to attain perfection in life, and especially for people who are about to die. And the purport, Prabhupada says that this is the purpose of accepting a guru, to find out how to achieve perfection. And he mentions, he talks about pseudo gurus who are accepted by wealthy people. He's probably referring to people in India. We have to remember that the first canto, Prabhupada translated the first canto in India before he arrived in the West. He completed the first canto. And so he was referring to wealthy people in India who like to keep a guru for show, to appear religious, and to pseudo gurus who flatter rich people for money but do not enlighten them. And that's why Prabhupada says that they'll both go to hell. So, but Parikshit Maharaj is the ideal disciple. He asks the right questions. And he does so not just for himself, but for all people. So it is this question of Maharaj Parikshit that inspires the appearance of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the age of Kali. So this is setting the scene for the most important book in the world to appear. Srimad Bhagavatam is the light in the darkness of the age of Kali. That's how it's described in the beginning of chapter one. That it has appeared to light up the darkness. Because this is, we have to remember that this was the time of the advent of Kali. So all the Brahmins, all the sages, they were worried about how people can get delivered in the age of Kali, because it's the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, the age of sinful activities and the gradual degradation of humanity. So Krishna came in the form of Vyasadeva to compile the Vedic literatures, including the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Sukadeva Goswami was the son of Vyasadeva, so he had imbibed the Srimad Bhagavatam from Vyasadeva. Although Sukadeva Goswami actually stayed in his mother's womb for several years, because he didn't want to come out, he didn't want to get into Maya. And so presumably it was during that time that he heard Srimad Bhagavatam from his father, Srila Vyasadeva, the literary incarnation of Lord Krishna. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is actually the favorite book of the devotees. It was the favorite book of Lord Chaitanya, the favorite book of all the devotees. It contains the pastimes of Krishna. It provides full general knowledge of the material world, the spiritual world, what they are, the Sankhya Yoga, study of matter and spirit. There is so much in the Bhagavatam. There's so much scientific knowledge about the universe, the planets, the creation, all the incarnations of the Lord, all the pastimes of the Lord in his different incarnations, stories of kings, sages, and pure devotees. So there is no other book that provides so much knowledge together with so much beauty, beautiful verses, beautiful pastimes, and the power to set people free from material illusion. The Srimad Bhagavatam is a gift to the world from the Lord. To provide the knowledge how to perfect human life and to become liberated from material existence. So Maharaj Parikshit, in this scene, he's actually displaying a perfect example of how to prepare for death. Time of death, he gives up everything. He surrenders to a guru, qualified guru, and he asks for guidance. So this great king, this great emperor, the grandson of Arjuna. He's taking guidance from a 16-year-old boy, but who obviously is not an ordinary 16-year-old boy. But he, Sukadeva Goswami, took birth for this purpose, to speak the Srimad Bhagavatam, to enlighten the world. So Maharaj Pariksit, he had the advantage of notice. He had a 7 days notice that he was going to die. So this gave him an advantage that he was able to prepare himself, which he did very quickly, and to do the right thing to prepare his soul for the time of death. And for us, we're not going to necessarily have this advantage. Many people do have, like, for example, people have a terminal illness, but so they have some time to prepare, but actually to know exactly when you're going to die, and this is actually extraordinary. Maharaj Pariksit was given this opportunity. So in other words, this curse of the Brahmin boy became a blessing. It was like a blessing in disguise, even though it was a horrible curse, which Maharaj Pariksit didn't really deserve to be cursed like that, from the point of view of ordinary justice. But in this case, it was a blessing in disguise, a blessing disguised as a curse, because it enabled the Srimad Bhagavatam to be spoken and to be given to the world. And these two great souls, Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Pariksit, were the ones who were chosen for this task. But both of them were extraordinary personalities. So even people who are told that they have a limit, even people who are told that they have a terminal disease and that they don't have long to live, but the doctors can never tell them exactly. The doctors may give an estimate, they give a prognosis, but those estimates, those prognoses often turn out to be wrong. Often people, they live longer, much longer than those. And I've seen in cases of many devotees, actually, that they've been given it like a deadline date by the doctors, but they just keep living because actually it's Krishna only who can give that time. We all have a certain time in a day which is already destined for us, that we're going to die. But we don't know when it is. Nobody knows. Only Krishna knows when that is. So how do we prepare for death? We don't know when it's going to come. We don't know when we're going to die. So how do we prepare for that? Actually, for us, as aspiring devotees, our whole life is a preparation for death. So we don't really have to do anything special apart from doing what we're already doing, but trying to do it better. Because we already know what we're supposed to be doing. We've already received guidance and instructions from Srila Prabhupada and from our respective gurus, from the Vedic scriptures, from the acharyas. We have the path chalked out for us, following in the footsteps of the Bhajans. So we've been given the process, which I'm sure you all know. The chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, following the principles, and engaging in devotional service. And all of these activities, all of these practices of bhakti yoga are meant to help us to advance in Krishna consciousness. So by advancing in Krishna consciousness, we become ready for death, because the time of death is a test to see how we can remember Krishna, and it's not, and but it requires a preparation. So it's not that we can just enjoy life and do whatever we feel like doing, and then at the time of death we'll remember Krishna. It doesn't really work like that. So the ability to remember Krishna actually comes as a result of years of accumulated devotional service. But also, even if we are in such a difficult situation at the time when we're leaving our body that we can't think very well, that our consciousness is disturbed, the body is disturbed. Death is a very difficult situation and challenging, and we can't always be clear-headed, especially if we're plagued by illness. But we don't have to be worried about that, because Krishna, he knows what is in our hearts. He knows what we've done for him. He knows our deepest feelings. He knows our deepest desires. And he knows all the service that we have endeavored to do to please her. And so even if we don't remember Krishna at the time of death, Krishna will remember us. As long as we have dedicated our lives to him, then we have nothing to fear at the time of death. So how to prepare for death is just, as I said before, carry on doing it, what you're doing, but try to get better at it. So of course there's the gradual process of sadhana bhakti and the gradual reawakening of Krishna consciousness. It usually takes time. But even if we have not completed, like Krishna tells Arjuna in the Gita, that in this process there's no loss or diminution, neha vikrama nashasti. And because Arjuna asks Krishna that if we haven't completed the process, if we haven't attained perfection, then what's going to happen to us when we die? And Krishna reassures Arjuna that there's nothing to worry about, because everything you've done, there's no loss, and that will remain. So even if you have to take birth again, even if you have not attained perfection of Krishna consciousness, even if you've got more work to do and you have to take birth again, but everything you've done will go with you. So spiritually, everything we do goes with us. Nothing else goes with us. Whatever we've achieved materially, nothing of that goes with us. Whatever relationships we have in this world, none of that goes with us. At the time of death, we're all alone. But whatever we have done spiritually, that will all go with us. So that is why spiritual life should always be given priority, because it's the only thing that lasts forever. So Prabhupada, he translated the Srimad Bhagavatam into English with purports. And when he arrived in the West, he had the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam with him. So this was the first book that he translated. The first canto was completed. And when Prabhupada traveled to America for the first time, he had several sets of Bhagavatam. In fact, most of his luggage was just his sets of Bhagavatam. And then other than that, there were just a few basic minimum bare necessities with him, a few clothes and very basic supplies. But he had a whole case of Srimad Bhagavatams. And with that case of Srimad Bhagavatams, he established ISKCON. For the first several months, for almost a year, Prabhupada was on his own before he started accruing followers and disciples. And it was actually by selling the Bhagavatams that he maintained himself. And so he was doing the book distribution himself to begin with, and he was maintaining himself like that. And so Krishna was taking care of Prabhupada through the Srimad Bhagavatam. That was his association, you could say, because he left everything behind. He had no association of devotees. He was all alone. But the Bhagavatam was his association. And so it was like Krishna, because the books are non-different from Krishna. They're like deities. So Krishna, in the form of the Bhagavatam, was taking care of him, maintaining him. And then he carried on translating further books from there with his typewriter and his... he was just typing at that point before he got the dictaphone from his American disciples. He was typing with an old manual typewriter. And this Bhagavatam was the first book available for his first followers to read, although there were limited copies, and so they would have to pass it around among themselves. And then it was after that that Prabhupada translated the Bhagavad Gita, teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and other books. But he continued to translate the Srimad Bhagavatam until his last breath. So even if he took some time out to provide the Gita, the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and the Krishna book, and the Ishopanishad, a few main books, and then also the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which he's completed very quickly in an amazing amount of time. So he wanted to provide all these books. Prabhupada was very aware about death. He knew that he could die at any time. So he wanted to provide all these books, but he also wanted to provide the whole Bhagavatam. So that's why every night he would be up. He would give up his sleep and he would be up from around 1 o'clock in the morning and spending all those early hours of the morning when everybody else was sleeping, translating the books and writing the purports. It was a labor of love. And he provided the Krishna book because Prabhupada was aware that he could leave at any time. he wrote the Krishna book before he completed the Bhagavatam, because he wanted to make sure that we would have the pastimes of Krishna, which are obviously the most important pastimes for us as devotees of Krishna. I mean, in the Bhagavatam, they're saved till the 10th canto because it's a lead up, you know, starting from the lotus feet. The 10th canto is said to be the lotus face of Krishna, but we're supposed to understand many other things before we can understand Krishna's pastimes. But Prabhupada gave a Krishna's pastimes in the form of the Krishna book just to make sure that that would be available for all of us, the greatest gift. But then after he'd completed all these other books, he carried on with the Bhagavatam. He was actually translating the Bhagavatam right until his last breath, when he was on his deathbed. So just as Parikshit Maharaj was hearing Srimad Bhagavatam until his last breath, in the same way, Srila Prabhupada was translating Srimad Bhagavatam until his last breath. He never retired from it. He never went into samadhi or secret bhajan. This was his samadhi. So that was Prabhupada's gift to the world. And although he didn't complete it, yeah, that's what I was going to say, although he didn't complete it, so the remainder, he was working on the 10th canto, Prabhupada, when he left. So the remainder of the 10th canto, 11th canto, 12th canto was completed by his disciples. Specifically, Radhayananda Goswami and Gopi Pranjana and others, but mainly it was Radhayananda Goswami who completed the translation and the purports on behalf of Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada was determined to translate the Bhagavatam with purports for English-speaking people, for the Western world, because his mission, given to him by his Guru Maharaj, was to preach Krishna consciousness to English-speaking people. And that's why he was very, very dedicated to this mission. So not only was he working on his books, but he traveled to the West, starting centers, giving classes, preaching, managing, traveling, and at the same time writing the books. These were superhuman accomplishments, which prove that Prabhupada was just superhumanly empowered. And it's actually absolutely amazing what he achieved. Because he was determined to carry out this mission, and it was his mission. He was the one who took it up. The Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he gave the chance to all his disciples, but Prabhupada was the one who took it up. And this mission, it's even in his pranam mantra. Prabhupada actually composed his own pranam mantra. Namaste Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pracharita, Nirvashesha Shunivadi, Paschachyade Shatarita. So his mission was to deliver the Western countries, Paschachyade Shatarita, from impersonalism and voidism. This was his mission. So after all the sacrifice that Prabhupada has made for us and for the world, now it is our duty to bring his teachings to the world and to bring these books to the world, because these books are meant for us to read, but also for us to distribute. And so how to bring this knowledge to the world is by distributing books, by talking to people, by forming sanghas, by giving talks online. There are so many ways that we can continue the legacy that Prabhupada has passed on to us to spread this knowledge to English-speaking people in the Western world. So our internal service is to develop our Krishna consciousness, and our external service is to spread Krishna consciousness to others. And of course, the Bhagavatam is maybe difficult to understand for newcomers. So usually the Bhagavad Gita is recommended first because that's more simple and basic. Although, of course, there's a lot. There's a lot in the Gita as well, but that's like the sort of classic main basic book of our philosophy for newcomers. And then after that, then the Bhagavatam is the next step. Because the first step is to teach the difference between matter and spirit, which is actually there in every religion and every honest philosophy, but which people tend to misunderstand or to forget, to not really understand properly due to the influence of Maya. So before they can understand the Srimad Bhagavatam, they need to learn the basics. And Prabhupada wanted us to make whatever adjustment is necessary to spread Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada was very broad-minded and flexible. Otherwise, it would not have been possible for him to establish Krishna consciousness in the West among hippies and drug addicts. So he was very patient with that. And he was able to convince them by giving them his association, by teaching them to chant, and by gradually transforming them into Vaishnavas. So his intention was not actually to propagate a religion, like an Indian religion or Indian culture, but to propagate spiritual knowledge, which is applicable to everyone, universal. That's why it's meant for everyone. And similarly, this is our mission. Should we choose to accept it, as they say? So I am going to stop there and see if anyone has any questions. Back to Lucas, do we have any questions?
Thank you very much, Mataji, for the beautiful class. So far, we've not had any questions. I just quickly want to go through it again. You spoke wonderfully on this question of Parikshit and mentioned how this question is actually what inspired the Srimad Bhagavatam to be spoken. So it's really, really, inspiring to see that also, how much, a question can actually lead to such a great revelation. You were glorifying Srimad Bhagavatam and then also linked it to Srila Prabhupada's life. And I really like that point of how Parikshit Maharaj, he was hearing Srimad Bhagavatam till his last breath. And so Srila Prabhupada, he was translating till the last breath. And it kind of dawned upon me that Srila Prabhupada, actually, he was not so much prompted by anyone to speak it. In the first time, but he was rather prompted by his Guru Maharaj to share. So it's, we can just see the unfathomable, compassion he has on the fallen souls to actually bring the knowledge to them, even without people being qualified, asking the right questions in that sense. And, but due his association and giving the knowledge, then people gradually develop into the devotees, like you were saying. So one question, you just in the end, you were speaking about it also, how actually Srila Prabhupada wanted to give us this spiritual science, and that is applicable to everybody. But oftentimes we hear that people say, this is nothing for me. Can you maybe speak a little bit about that? How can we convince them that this is actually, you know, for everybody, like Parikshit also says, which is very striking here for me also.
Well, we have to tell them that it's non-sectarian. I think sometimes Western people, when they see devotees, because of the way that we dress, it can create a barrier. So, you know, that's why Prabhupada, he gave permission for preaching purposes that we can wear Western clothes if it helps people to feel more comfortable and it makes it easier for them to relate to us and to think that, because if they see us wearing exotic dress, then they think, well, I can't see myself dressing like that. This seems to be something Indian, and I don't think it's really for me. But we need them to understand that they don't have to change their dress. That is not a requirement. The change of dress is not a requirement. And, you know, none of the cultural trappings are a requirement, for becoming Krishna conscious. So I think we need to be very sensitive to people's feelings. We need to be able to have the empathy to put ourselves in their shoes and think, how are they seeing us? And how can I make this attractive to them, something that they can relate to? And find out what people are interested in and what... But the main thing is to drop these trappings where necessary so that it can become universal, because otherwise it can be difficult for the Krishna consciousness movement to really expand into the West and among Western people, because they may see it as something Hindu or Indian. As a religion, people are not very much interested nowadays in organized religion, but a lot of people are interested in spirituality, actually, because, you know, spirituality became so lost when science took over and kind of demonized religion. And so there's a kind of a spiritual vacuum in society, which it's now being filled up with different things like yoga and meditation and mindfulness. These things are becoming popular. But beyond these things, you know, people need to understand that God exists and that he's not out to get them, you know, that they shouldn't be afraid of him, that there is a loving God, that they have an eternal relationship with him. So first of all, you know, you are a soul, which a lot of people can understand that part, because it's quite simple to, I mean, the logic, it's quite simple. And then for the existence of God, we don't have to quote our scriptures for people who are not really connected with our scriptures, but we can actually convince people by logic and argument and scientifically that God exists. So we need to learn these arguments, you know, because today people are very impressed by science as well. So we need to show that we can also speak in scientific language. Of course, you know, we don't have to be brain surgeons or anything, but just sort of some basic, I think we need to make ourselves aware of the narratives that are going on in the modern world. We need to make ourselves aware of what's going on around us. So if we're going to live in a bubble and then we try to jump out of this bubble and bring people into it, they're going to, you know, they're not going to be able to relate to that. So we need to be able to relate to them, to their world. We need to be able to enter their world and see what kind of things people are interested in, what they need to hear. And, you know, the latest scientific research. I mean, if we get some tidbits of knowledge, we don't have to really study deeply science and philosophy and history, but some general knowledge about things will really help with our preaching. Just some tidbits will help, some kind of basic knowledge and information that can help support our preaching and make it more relevant and convincing. to people. So I think we really need to educate ourselves. How, and Prabhupada was really always, he was always quizzing his disciples and having like these debates. He was always engaging them in philosophical debates. He would play the devil's advocate and say something that asked them to defeat it. So he really wanted us to become expert in philosophical debating, and but with logic and reason. That that's a very important skill that we really need to learn.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think these are very relevant points. You were saying about being empathic, sensitive to where people are at, how we can connect with them, and then also learn to logically debate and present Krishna consciousness in a rational way like that. Thank you very much. So I think Prayochan Prabhu, he's having a question. He's ready there. Is that true?
Yes.
Jai.
That's okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Hare Krishna, Prayochan Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Very nice class. Thank you. It's certainly got a thoughtful mood to it, a contemplative mood. But it occurs to me, this preparation for passing away, that King Parikshit was eventually resolved to do, was, you know, either now or, and Prabhupada, it says also all of us, we should prepare. It can happen any time. And I noticed that actually with people like, you could say recently, Jankanath, he let go eventually when he knew that his body was finished. And that was certainly a recent example of this, but also with Jivapati, Mother Kalangana, Bhakti Tirthaswami, all these people, they found that actually with the body, if the service is no longer there, other than letting go, is the moment that we can go when the body is, it can't be used for the service of Krishna. It's got no purpose anymore. So then they let go of the body. In their circumstances. So really, this verse is sort of like an epitome of that, actually. It says, there comes to a point when you, like Parikshit did, had made the decision, he had to let go of this body and his duties and all those sort of things. The reality was that he just had to listen. And hear the message of Bhagavatam from this great sage, Sukadeva Swami. Maybe you could comment on that.
Yes. Yes, that's very true, what you're saying. And I think for a devotee in that kind of situation, there would be some indication. But yeah, in that situation, one would have to be ready to let go at the right time, whatever time that is, and just, you know, surrender to the plan of the Lord and prepare for that. And it's a gradual process like that, because when devotees pass on, it gives example for others of how to do it. They're teaching others also how to do it, how to surrender, and how to, most importantly, fix the mind on Krishna at the time of death. Okay.
Okay, thank you very much. We have one more question here coming from Sharadiya Rasamataji. She says, Hare Krishna, dear Mother Jagannatheshwari, thank you for the beautiful class. In regards to remembering Krishna at the time of death, if our death comes completely unexpectedly, as in the case of an accident, it seems that we may not have time to consciously make an effort to remember Krishna. Then we may only remember Krishna if he has become prominent in our subconscious mind. My question is thus, how can we transform our subconscious mind so that we can spontaneously remember Krishna at any time of calamity?
Okay. Yes, that's true. That's a very good point, Shardia. Thank you for that. As I'd mentioned before, that even if we cannot remember Krishna at the time of death, Krishna will remember us. But I think it's true also what you say, that subconsciously Krishna will be there in our subconscious mind if we have practiced remembering him. And so it is through our service and through our daily activities that we learn to remember Krishna. So we have to practice. We have to just practice. That we get so many opportunities to practice, like, you know, because there are so many challenging situations in this world. And whenever we hit a brick wall and we don't know where to go, then we remember, like a light bulb. Now I have to remember Krishna. Now I have to pray to Krishna. So we get so many opportunities like that to remember Krishna. But then it should get to the point where it's not just in those moments where we really need him because we have a problem that we remember Krishna, but we need to get to the point where we remember Krishna anyway, because we are feeling his presence, you know, through our sadhana, through our chanting and through our service. We're actually starting to feel his presence so that his remembrance comes to us very easily. And we enjoy remembering Krishna. We feel happy remembering Krishna. When all the kind of material attachments and material enjoyments start to become less attractive, and remembrance of Krishna becomes more attractive. So like that, it's a gradual process. First by practicing, and then it becomes more and more natural.
Thank you. Beautiful. Shadya Rasa Mataji, if you would like to add anything or ask further, because she's also on the call. If not, then I think we've come to an end. There's no more questions here. We have one comment. Yeah, Shradhya Rasa Mataji is saying that thank you for the lovely answer, Mother. So she's happy and satisfied. And we have one more comment from Nuala. Thank you for a lovely class. And so I think that's the mood that we have after this class. We're really grateful, Mataji, for this beautiful class and explanations on this very important verse, as you pointed out. And yeah, we will conclude here.